I have to admit to being a little bit of a UU, a Unitarian Universalist history buff. And so, as we continue to engage this month's theme of the prophetic imperative, let me offer this wee historical romp. It is edited from an excerpt from The Transcendent and the Prophetic by the Reverend Erica Hewitt. Unitarianism and Universalism have both been around for many, many centuries. Unitarianism grew out of the Protestant Reformation in the 1500s. Universalist theology was present in early Christianity in the very earliest days. But it didn't really take form of an organized religious movement until the late 1700s. In 1961, the Unitarian Association and the Universalist Church merged into the Unitarian Universalist Association, bringing together two overlapping but different clutches of people. This was also the year that the Canadian Unitarian Council, our national organization, was founded. A new identity was in process of being forged and shaped. By the 1980s, our movement was witness to a new dimension of spiritual reflection. Unitarian Universalists thought to reframe our religious principles and acknowledge the shared sources of our faith. Thus were born our UU principles and purposes. The first version of our principles and sources, created through a democratic process, were adopted in 1984. Amended in 1995, and have become the backbone of our religious community, with this year Canadian UU's adding an eighth principle, calling us to individual and communal action that accountably dismantles racism and systemic barriers to full inclusion in ourselves and our institutions. This is a living faith. We also name the sources of our inspiration. Unlike the principles, which sometimes to my ears can sound like a United Nations document, the sources contain overtly religious language and imply bold professions about our beliefs. The one that I'd like to focus on this morning is the second source that states that the living tradition we share draws from words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Given the Unitarian and Universalist traditions of emphasizing the goodness and minimizing the sinfulness of humanity, we are often accused of sidestepping the problem of evil. This source, though, claims that evil exists, but points to institutional structures, not necessarily individuals, as evil's dwelling place. There's more. This source suggests that the powers of evil are countered not by divine forces, but by people, by invoking the transforming power of love. It affirms that love is stronger than evil, that women and men have the power to confront and defeat its powers. Now, that mention of women and men, incidentally, was intentional. Women were named before men to reverse that sexism and make women more visible. When the sources were created in the 1980s, our Unitarian Universalist awareness of sexism was growing. Feminism and liberation theologies called UUs to a more prophetic faith, a more risk-taking faith, daring to name what is broken, to challenge assumptions, and to take actions requiring discomfort and sacrifice, that we might contribute more effectively to the repair and transformation of our world. That was in the 80s, 1980s. So relevant still today. And another thought. This source describes women and men, and I would say the language perhaps needs to be changed now to persons rather than the binary. Refers to persons as prophetic. What would happen, however, if we moved the word prophetic to describe words and deeds rather than persons? After all, the world with all of its harmful powers and structures has been transformed and repaired by ordinary people who stepped forward when they could no longer keep silent. Real people like us who came out of the ordinary. Character is nothing without behavior. If we were to speak of prophetic words and deeds of individuals, might we see ourselves more clearly as agents of love and transformation? May we be the transforming power of love, and may love guide us as we join our voices together in singing the song, Love Will Guide Us. Thank you all, and thank you again for welcoming me here. Ours is a tradition motivated by deeds rather than creeds. Through the practice of daily living a life of integrity and compassion, rather than one dictated by dogma or external judgment, ours is a living, dynamic faith that draws wisdom and insight from many sources. This is a unique aspect of our tradition, the recognition and embrace of diverse sources of understanding and inspiration. Our second source, which I've already referred to, is one of these sources of inspiration, the one particularly relevant, I think, for this morning. As the words and deeds of prophetic women and men, which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. What poignant and powerful language. Words and deeds of prophetic individuals which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. This is religious language, to be sure. The traditional idea of a prophet evokes the image of a chosen individual who speaks for or on behalf of the divine, an intermediary, if you will, whose role is to promote change through their action and message. The English word prophet is derived from the Greek word meaning advocate. a meaning closer to the understanding useful for our purposes, to engage that prophetic voice within each of us, and to find a corporate prophetic voice. The idea of the prophetic imperative, the theme for this month, was, I believe, coined by Reverend Richard Gilbert in his book with that title, The Prophetic Imperative, Social Gospel in Theory and Practice, in which he suggests that Unitarian Universalism as a movement has been preoccupied with a kind of self-actualization that has more to do with personal growth of a psychological kind than with spiritual growth of a prophetic kind. In his book, he contends that our movement lives under a prophetic imperative, a religious mandate for corporate address of the church to the systemic problems of society. He puts a choice before us all: the continued privatization of our religious lives, or the potential revival of prophetic, socially engaged living. I think this is what bell hooks speaks about in that reading as well, the love in action. And moving beyond our individual lives and moving into the common good. Gilbert, a humanist, is clear about what he feels to be one of Unitarian Universalism's most important tasks when he reflects that Ralph Waldo Emerson said, "There is a crack in everything God has made." Gilbert writes, I quote, "I submit that one of the central missions of the Unitarian Universalist movement is trying to fix these cracks, repairing the world and creating the beloved community of love and justice. The inner urge to work in the service of this vision, he calls the prophetic imperative, the sewing together of spirituality and social action as a seamless garment." Bell Hooks calls this love as a verb, that we are making a choice, and with it comes both accountability and responsibility. The inner urge to work in service of a vision of beloved community, this statement so resonates with me. It touches a place of of yes. Creating the beloved community of love and justice is a term perhaps most associated with Martin Luther King Jr., a prophetic man to be sure, for he used it throughout his lifelong call to justice. He beautifully coined this term to mean that Christian sense of creating the kingdom of heaven here and now, a community with freedom, equity for all. This has always been my understanding of living my Unitarian Universalist faith, that it is about what happens here and now, creating the kingdom of heaven here and now. It invites us too into potentially deeper and more authentic notion of community. King's vision of beloved community made the distinction between desegregation and integration. Desegregation, he said, can be legislated and made law. It is still a negative, externally enforced. Integration is a matter of the heart as well. The recognition of the interconnectedness. It is love in action, love as action. This is, I feel, the call and the intention of the eighth principle, for us to move into the action of love. Martin Luther King, in a beautiful piece of prose titled A Network of Mutuality, said, "We are caught in an inescapable network of mutuality, tied in a single garment of destiny. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. There are some things in our social system to which all of us ought to be maladjusted. Hatred and bitterness can never cure the disease of fear. Only love can do that. We must evolve for all human conflict a method which rejects revenge, aggression, and retaliation. The foundation of such a method is love. This is love in action. Love as action. Love as a verb. Tied in a single garment of destiny," says Martin Luther King, called to create beloved community of love and justice. The inner urge to work in the service of this vision, Gilbert calls the prophetic imperative. It is our theme for this month, the sewing together of spirituality and social action as a seamless garment. While the idea of prophetic may lead us to thoughts of early Hebrew biblical prophets, and Gilbert certainly has their example in mind when forming the term, it is that notion of the prophet in any time, place, or religion, who is the voice to challenge corruption and demand social change for the common good, for the flourishing of life. The prophet can be found in so many places. It is an invitation for us to be prophets in our own lives and times, to bring the fullness of that into community, this community, that we might be a prophetic church. Quoting again from Gilbert, "The prophetic church is a religious community that seeks to intervene in human history for the sake of social justice. The intervention is made in the context of religious conviction, but without supernatural confidence of the Hebrew prophets. The authority of the prophetic liberal church will instead be derived in somewhat more humanistic terms that articulate a transcendent standard for justice. The imperative stressed here is that which emerges from the discipline of freedom, and freedom is not merely the absence of restraint, but the will and capacity to act on one's environment. It calls us into that place of responsibility and accountability for living love. It is a freedom that implies responsibility to enrich and expand freedom in the social order and for all. And this freedom demands of the free person to seek its benefit for all. Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere." So imperative in this context has to do with the compulsion of conscience, personal and corporate, a sense of urgency to live out the ethical implications of religious faith. If we are to live with love as an action, a verb in our own and our community's lives, accountability and responsibility are how it operates. Perhaps you've heard the phrase, "Justice is what love looks like in public." My faith calls me to this, calls me to act to the act of love. You know, William Ellery Channing, 2 centuries ago, set down the first principle of Unitarian social responsibility, religion as a social principle, actually, 1820. In the sermon, he said, "Religion, we are told, is a private, personal thing, a concern between the individual and God. His neighbor or the community must not meddle with it." I would maintain that religion is eminently a social principle, entering into social life as having most important bearing on public well. The social character of religion is not sufficiently regarded. So said Ellery Channing 200 years ago. Social character and ethical discernment can be understood as foundations of religious life. And as our opening reading said, character is nothing without behavior. May we be inspired by this beloved community and our second source to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. May we live love as a verb. As a Unitarian Universalist, I believe that the spirit of life, love, and truth resides in each one of us. It's not a new thought for Unitarians. Unitarian ministers in the early 1800s were talking about this ability to be able to act, to bring heaven on earth. And they talked about how we do this, and we continue to, through conscience, reason, and faith. Unitarian minister Karen Anderson suggests that the prophetic urge, the love in action within each of us, happens when we are called to find what breaks our hearts, and then find where that heartbreak intersects with the needs of the world, and then to act on it. You see, I think that this source, this prophetic imperative, doesn't just inspire us. Inspiration is a good thing, don't get me wrong, but this is an invitation to take it a step further. We're being inspired and then invited to become the early prophets that challenge and confront powers and structures of evil in our own lives. We do this because this spirit of life is in each one of us. We're being challenged to be today's prophetic voices. The truth that resides in our hearts can be our guide, as the song said. Love will guide us. This small voice exists in each one of us. We have the spirit of life within us, and it is up to us to listen well to that still small voice as it nudges us towards a just and compassionate world for every living being. What I find interesting about this source is that we are challenged to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, with compassion, and with the transforming power of love. This sounds like our eighth principle we just adopted. We believe that it is more important to stand on the side of love than to meet evil with evil. We work together to build a land, a promised land, a land where peace can be born, where people are bold. I believe that here in this community and in UU communities around the world and other communities as well, there is a groundswell of this energy, of love in action rather than an eye for an eye. I believe we can create a bright new day, a day when love will not divide us, and to build a land where reflections of grace exist in every embrace. These words may sound a little familiar to you because they come from a song that was written by the Reverend Jason Shelton, a song that originally was titled Standing on the Side of Love. That was challenged, and Jason was challenged because those for whom standing is not an option, those who had mobility issues and others, did not feel included. And the challenge was taken, and it was hard for the author, who had been so inspired to write that song, to have to look at the challenges that it presented for some. In his effort to do that, in his deepening understanding, he was able to move, and now we sing it as answering the call of love, which I think is really clearly moving from into love as an action instead of just a feeling. This is the message and the invitation I extend today, that we consider love a verb in our lives. It is not schmaltzy, this love that I'm talking about. It is the interconnected web of all things and seeing ourselves as part of that. It is responding when something within us perks up and says, this is not right to say something, to do something, to be a presence, to be the presence of love in this world. If we can do this collectively, the ripples of that will, we can't even know how far it will reach. For me, when Jason changed the words to answering the call of love, it moved it into love as a verb and an action. Will you please join with me in singing Answering the Call of Love? And I invite you to rise in body or in spirit, to stay on mute if at home, and sing along.